What an incredible opportunity it is to have Rabbi Leibowitz with us tonight. What an awesome, really an awesome opportunity to be able to learn with Rabbi Leibowitz, especially with the busy schedule and lots of things going on. We really appreciate Rabbi Leibowitz, you joining us this evening and really being part of so many of our programs. We look forward to not only Words of Torah tonight, but Mitzvah Hashem, many other opportunities to learn from you and with you as we have. I will just put your screen now, Rabbi Leibowitz, on Spotlight. You could change it back to whatever view makes sense for you, but this way everyone will be able to see you. And we'll begin with this year now. Thank you so much again. And without further ado, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Okay, thank you so much, Rabbi Bernstein. Thank you for having me. Thank you for inviting me. It's always such a pleasure to share some Divrei Torah with the students of Stern College and whoever else might be here. It's a particular pleasure to see so many familiar faces, whether it be Talmidot from Daf Yomi each and every day. It's nice to see you. Or cousins of mine. I spotted a couple of cousins on the Zoom already, or whether it be wives of Talmidim or Talmidim who stick their head into the window while their wives are trying to listen to a shiur. I appreciate that as well. So it's so wonderful to see all of you and to welcome all of you to tonight's shiur. Rabbi Bernstein made a request that we speak about Hilchos Shabbos. I assume this is the theme throughout this time period that you're discussing Hilchos Shabbos. So I gave him a number of options, and the option that he chose does an entire family have to be Mekabel Shabbos at the same time? Now, I don't know what's been going on in your homes, but I can tell you that in my house, particularly now that we're back in shul, kind of, you know, where we have to sign up for minyanim and register in advance, and we have the plug minyan, and we have the shkia minyan on Erev Shabbos, and then we have the B'dieved, Magen Avram plag minyan, which is somewhere in between that people sign up for. So every single Erev Shabbos, there is a discussion. That's what we call arguments when we speak to the public in my house. About when we should make Shabbos. The kids always, you know, have a lot to do. They're very, very busy people, and they need to make Shabbos at the latest possible time. I like making Shabbos early because I have nothing to do, and my wife very often likes to make Shabbos early, but then realizes last minute that there's still a whole lot more to do. So we then need to change things up. So we're constantly having this discussion about making Shabbos. So one of the solutions that we came up with is we'll go to shul early, we'll make Shabbos, because we'll ignore what the kids want. We'll go to shul early, we'll make Shabbos, and my wife will just tell us before we come back what time she's going to be ready to make Shabbos, and we'll come home whenever she's ready. Sometimes it's 15 minutes after shul ends, sometimes it's 2 minutes after shul ends, sometimes a half hour after shul ends. But we'll hang out, we'll shmooze, and we'll come back whenever she's ready to make Shabbos. So the question is that kosher? Is that okay? I guess I gave away the ending already. I told you that we do that, so obviously I think it's kosher. But are you allowed to do that? Can you have that half the family is making Shabbos at a certain time, and the other half the family is making Shabbos at a different time? And it was even more pronounced a month or two ago, before we returned. I don't know where all of you are. In some of your communities, maybe you haven't returned to shul, but before we returned to shul, where we were all davening at home, so it was a little bit strange sometimes, or could have been a little bit strange, if we're singing Lecha Dodi, and we're it's always strange when my family sings. It doesn't sound much like a song, but it's if we're being Mekabel Shabbos, and we're davening Friday night Mariv. And and there are still members of the family that haven't lit candles yet, or that are doing malachos, that are taking a shower, that are doing last minute cooking, or turning on an oven, turning off an oven, things of that nature. So is that allowed that you have in the same house different things going on at different times? So this topic fascinates me because, well, for a number of reasons. The primary reason that it fascinates me is I've been working on. Not really working. I've been thinking about a series of shiurim that I'm going to be doing over the summer I don't even remember for who. It's on Zoom for somebody. A series of shiurim relating to Rav Moshe Feinstein's Piskei Halacha and other contemporary Gedolim who disagreed with him. Meaning my goal was that each day should be a different psaka of Rav Moshe and a different Gadol who disagreed with him about that psak. And the idea is that whether you agreed with Rav Moshe or didn't agree with Rav Moshe, if you were alive when Rav Moshe Feinstein was on this earth paskening halachos or since then, and he had something to say about it, you could not write a tshuva without addressing it. Meaning, it's not like any other posek where, okay, I don't have to read everybody else's books. Rav Moshe was that important. He was that big that you had to deal with it. You had to contend with him. So I was going to, so that was the idea. So in this particular topic, Rav Moshe has a very innovative tshuva. Rav Moshe was a very creative thinker. You know, Rav Shachter often points out that people think that Rav Soloveitchik was so innovative and so creative and so cutting edge, and that Rav Moshe was just, you know, standard straight halacha. He said in philosophy and in drush, Rav Shachter was very innovative, Rav Soloveitchik rather, was very innovative and very cutting edge. But in actual halacha, he was about as traditional as they come. He kept every chumrah in the book, many chumras that are not in anybody's book. But as far as paskening halachas, he was as traditional as they come. You know, just what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, the Shach, the Taz, the basic commentaries, that's, you know, based on what emerges from the simple reading of the Gemara and the Rishonim. Rav Moshe always had a twist. He always had something, he always had a chiddush to add. He was very, very creative. And very often his Piskei Halacha were groundbreaking because no one ever heard of things like this. You know, to the extent that but you had to respect it because he was Mishichmo Ulamaila, as they say. He was head and shoulders above everybody else in terms of Psak Halacha in the generation. So it's a fascinating you know, limud to think about, you know, the different areas where Rav Moshe Paskan Halacha is. But in this particular topic, Rav Moshe has a very innovative tshuva that I think is worthy of our attention, and particularly not just our attention, but particularly what the innovative points are, to identify what the innovative points are, and where people took issue on each of those interesting chidushim, each of those interesting points. But let's start with the basics. Are we allowed to be Mekabel Shabbos before it's actually Shabbos? So not only are we allowed to be Mekabel Shabbos before it's actually Shabbos, not only may we start Shabbos before it's actually Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Reish Samech Aleph, Si'if Beis, Yesh Omrim shet sarich lahosif mechala lakodesh. That yesh omrim, some say you must add from the weekday onto Shabbos. Now it's interesting that the Shulchan Aruch writes this as yesh omrim. Yesh omrim implies that not everybody says this, that it's some sort of dispute, or that maybe it's even a minority opinion. So the Bir Halacha writes, no, it's not a minority opinion. It is most certainly the majority opinion. The reason the Shulchan Aruch writes it only as yesh omrim and doesn't just say that you have to add mechala lakodesh, that you have to add extra time from weekday onto Shabbos, is because the one opinion that says that you don't have to do that, that there is no mitzvah of being mosav mechala lakodesh when it comes to Shabbos, is the shita of the Rambam. That is the Rambam's opinion. And when it comes to the relationship between the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch was extremely deferential to the Rambam, to the point that if he's ever going to paskin not like the Rambam, he'll make it sound like it's a minority opinion, even though it's everybody but the Rambam that says that you have to be Mosav Mechala LaKodesh. And that's why he writes it as Yesh Omrim, even though it's really something that is almost universally accepted, that one has to add from a weekday onto Shabbos. So there's definitely a mitzvah, save for the Rambam, there's definitely a mitzvah to add on from Chol, from a weekday, to start Shabbos early. Where do we learn it from? The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Tes and elsewhere in Shas derives it from the pasuk of V'inisem es nafshoseichem b'tisha l'chodesh be'erev me'erev aderev tishmasu shabbatchem, that a person is supposed to practice inui, the afflictions of Yom HaKippurim, on the ninth day of the month in the evening. And the Gemara raises the question, well, wait a second, Yom HaKippurim is not on the ninth day of the month. That's Yom HaKippurim is on the tenth day of the month, right? The fast that's on the ninth day is Tishma. Yom Kippur is on the 10th day of the month. What does it mean? Betisha lechodesh. So v'chi betisha misanin. Balo ba Asara Misanin. Do we fast on the ninth day? No, absolutely not. We fast on the 10th day. So it says the Gemara, HaKetzad Maschil Umisanim Yiba'od Yom Kdei Lehosif Mechol HaKodesh, that we begin the fast early. We begin the fast when it's still daytime in order to add from the weekday into the holy day of Yom HaKippurim. So Yom Kippur starts when it's actually still the ninth day. So based on that, we show them extend that to all days of Kedusha, every Shabbos, every Yantif, that there's a mitzvah to start early, end a little bit late. That's the mitzvah known as Tosef HaShabbos. Now, comes along Rav Moshe, and Rav Moshe was asked, if a husband is Mekabel Shabbos, Miba'od Yom, husband is Mekabel Shabbos early, is the woman, is the wife allowed to continue to do malacha? So Rav Moshe starts by saying, L'chora Pashut, She'eino Nigreris Acharav, that it's obvious that a woman is not, that a wife is not going to be bound by her husband's Kabbalah Shabbos. Meaning, imagine a husband takes a neder, that he's not going to do something, he's not going to eat something. So is the wife bound by the neder that the husband takes? I know a guy who had the most challenging time losing weight. He just couldn't lose weight, and his weakness was chocolate cake. I don't know why that was, but that was his one thing. Chocolate cake, he just couldn't lay off of chocolate cake or babkas or whatever. That was his weakness, and he just couldn't lose weight. He just couldn't do it, no matter how much he knew that it was unhealthy for him. So one day he decided, he's a very religious guy, he decided to take a neder, that he was going to take a neder, that he's not going to eat chocolate cake or babka or kakosh or whatever, from whatever your lineage is, whatever you want to call those kinds of cakes. So that he took his neder, that he's not going to do it. Now, once it's a neder, it's an issur d'oraisa. It's no longer just like a good practice. Once he took a neder, it now became an issur d'oraisa. So he took a neder for the next 6 months. He's not going to eat the chocolate cake, and he lost 30 pounds because that was it. He would never eat chazer. He would never eat. Once something's a neder, so it's a din d'oraisa. So he's not going to violate a din d'oraisa. Very religious guy. We do not recommend that, by the way. Taking the darim is not a great idea. The Gemara has some pretty awful things to say about people who violate the darim, and therefore we'd rather not risk it. Bavon the darim, banim mesim k'shem k'tanim, other terrible things. We don't like taking the darim. In fact, when we go into Yom HaKippur, the first thing we want to make sure of before we face our judgment is that our nidarim are taken care of, that our nidarim are out of the way. Hataras nidarim and kol nidre, we take care of our nidarim. But that's what this fellow did. So if Moshe says, imagine a husband takes a neder. He's not going to eat chocolate cake. He's not going to eat a babka. So I spoke on a Zoom last week somewhere in Baltimore. It's funny, like I'm traveling, you know, in this chair, I'm traveling. So they said, we'd like to pay you. I said, I can't accept money to like sit in my desk, you know, like it's one thing if I'm traveling somewhere, but like, so they sent me a babka. Okay, so we had a babka. So let's say I took a neder that I'm not going to eat the babka. I didn't take such a neder. I did eat it, and it was delicious. But let's say I took such a neder. So my wife's not allowed to eat the babka? Of course she's allowed to eat it, says Rav Moshe. There's no issue with that. There's no problem with a wife not abiding by the nedarim that the husband took for himself. So there's no reason that just because he decides he's going to voluntarily start Shabbos early, that she should have to start Shabbos early. And he says, that's not at all. Lo shayich l'chayiv es ishto bekabalaso. That's how Rav Moshe starts. Now, one of the members of Rav Moshe Feinstein's generation who often argued with him was a Hungarian Rav by the name of Rav Moshe Stern. He was the Debreciner Rav. He came originally from the town of Debrecen, and he ultimately settled in Borough Park. He had a brother who was a big posek as well, Rav Betzalel Stern, who was a Rav in Australia, I believe, and he wrote a Tshuva Sefer called Betzalel Chachma, and Rav Moshe Stern wrote a Sefer called Tshuvas Be'er Moshe. Fascinating character. He's very, very machmir about certain issues, like public policy kinds of issues, like, you know, the worst issue in the world is to go to YU, you know, like those kinds of things. And he's very, very makil about other issues. Fascinating study to learn his tshuvas. So Debreciner Rav, on this particular point, brings rayas that Rav Moshe is correct. He brings several rayas, which we're not going to have time to get into right now, that Rav Moshe is correct. But on that point, that there's no reason just because a husband decides to do something that the wife has to do the same thing. But then Rav Moshe goes on, and Rav Moshe says, Chiddush number one. Rav Moshe writes, Ach, Ulay yesh makom la'usra b'malacha dilitzorech habal. Maybe, even though she doesn't have to accept Shabbos when he does, she can't do malacha for him. She's not allowed to do malacha for the husband. Kigon levasha lavuro, to cook for him. Me'adin divinafish ben amasecha. Diyisib yivam stafram ches, ta'eri be'ever arel, sha'adayin eina evad mechiv b'mitzvos mitzad atzmo, umutra lo lasos, malacha la'atzmo, avod b'malachas ravo, asr. Moshe makes a very mechudishtik, a very novel equation. And he says, when you have someone in your household who lives under your jurisdiction, so to speak, then that person may be allowed to do malacha for themselves, but they are not allowed to do malacha for you. And there's a specific pasuk in the Torah that tells us that, let's say you have an eved who is not a Jew, is not Jewish, and is therefore not bound by the Isra Malacha, but nevertheless, he can't do malacha for you. That's a separate iser to do malacha for to have someone under your jurisdiction, living under your control and your power to do malacha. And he says this is not the same as the iser of Amir la'akum. This is not the same as asking a non-Jew to do malacha for you in the contemporary sense that we know it, where you ask a non-Jew to turn on a light for you or to do something like that. That's an iser drabanan. Rav Moshe says, when it's someone under your jurisdiction, that's an issa d'oraisa. There's an issa d'oraisa for someone under your control in your household who's going to do malacha for you. So he writes, if that's the case, then it's very mistaver, it's very logical that even if a husband is mekabel Shabbos early, there's no issa of amir la'akum at that time. It's only an issa d'rabanan. So you're allowed to ask a guy, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you when it's not yet dark outside, when it's not yet real Shabbos, but I'll call upon him. Mashalo aser misha kibol Shabbos misha kibol Shabbos lo mil chavero laak mushal samalachto humishum shurak es v'drabanan. It's only okay for you to ask a non-Jew or someone else who's not a member of your household who maybe hasn't been mekabel Shabbos yet to do malacha for you, because that would only be nisud drabanan in the first place. But an eved arel hakanoilo, if you own an eved, that's an iser midaraisa. So he says Rav Moshe, v'im kein gam ishto shehi kenuya lo lemalachto. What does it mean? A man owns his wife? No, there's no such thing in Judaism that a man owns his wife. No, but he owns the work that she does. It used to be part of the, still is technically part of the ksuba, that the husband's obligation is to support his wife. And in order that it shouldn't be a one-sided deal, whatever couple of pennies she would make, because it used to be that women weren't out in the workforce, so she would do whatever she could do to make a couple of dollars. So that would go toward the husband, to the husband. And, you know, it was always a winning, this was a takana that Chazal made for the benefit of the wife, because the wife was not able to be self-supported. So she'd make a couple of pennies. And as a result of that, she would be supported. She would have a guaranteed support from her husband, Afilim and Glima Dal Kasvay. The husband has to support her, even if it means the shirt off his back. He has to do whatever he can to support his wife. So he owns her malacha. Whatever malacha she does is his. And therefore, says Rav Moshe, she can't do malacha for him because she's under his jurisdiction in that sense. Says Rav Moshe, but wait a second. You know, it's very nice in the times of Chazal for Chazal to be so kind and to say that in order to make sure that the Benos Yisrael are properly supported, they will make a takana that the husband has to make sure that they have enough food and they have enough clothing, and in exchange they'll give the couple of dollars that they, a couple of pennies that they make. But what if the woman is, is a high-powered attorney or is, running an investment firm on Wall Street, and is making a lot more money than the husband ever, the husband would ever dream of making. What happens when you have something like that? Does if the woman is bound by this takana that she has to give everything she makes to the husband so that he'll give her food, so that he'll support her? No, she has the right to say, "Eni nizonas ve'eni osa." No, thank you. You keep your meal allowance that you're willing to give me, your clothing allowance, and I'll keep my $2 million a year job, and we'll have that deal, and then my malacha does not belong to you. Then the woman's malacha does not belong to the husband. Says Rav Moshe, that's true. A woman has the right to say that. That's certain. That's clear in the Gemara. But so long as she doesn't, he still owns her malacha. And if he still owns her malacha, then she should not be doing malacha for him, not on a Rabbanah level, on a Doraisa level. So it's not Shabbos for her. She can do malacha for herself. Chiddush number one of Rav Moshe is she can't do malacha for him because it's no different than anyone else under his jurisdiction who cannot do malacha, who he cannot have do malacha for him when it's Shabbos for him. That is chiddush number one of Rav Moshe. Then Rav Moshe says chiddush number two. There are a total of three chiddushim here. Then Rav Moshe says chiddush number two. Chiddush number two, he says, Hanachon lani yazdaiti. He says what I think is absolutely correct, that if they are mekabel Shabbos early, the husband is mekabel Shabbos early because he's trying to fulfill this mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos. He's trying to add Kedusha to his life. And his practice is, his minag is, or the minag of where he lives, the minag of that community is to start Shabbos early. Well, then the woman for sure has to be mekabel Shabbos early. Because the halacha is, when it comes to minhagim, that a woman is supposed to follow the minhagim of her husband. So if he has an actual minhag, that he starts Shabbos early, then she should absolutely be obligated not only not to do malacha for him, but to start Shabbos early herself, because it's one of his minhagim. So just like if he waits 6 hours between fleishigs and melechigs, she, even though she may be of Dutch ancestry, and she just, you know, chose badly, so now she has to wait six. She has to wait 6 hours as well. But she has to. When it comes to this minhag as well, it should be no different. She should follow his minhagim. That's what Rav Moshe writes. Chiddush number two. Then Rav Moshe says chiddush number three. If he's making Shabbos early, says Rav Moshe, just because it's convenient, he doesn't make Shabbos early. In December he's not making Shabbos early. In December he's not, he's not rushing home to make Shabbos at 2:30 in the afternoon. That he's not doing. But all of a sudden, come summertime, where he doesn't, he doesn't like eating, starting dinner at 9:30 at night. So come summertime, he wants to make Shabbos early. So it's purely out of convenience, or even just because the children are going to be asleep if they make Shabbos too late, and they want the children to experience Shabbos. If it's purely out of convenience, says Rav Moshe, that is not at all binding on his wife, because that's not really a minhag. That's just a convenience. That's not really a minhag. So that is chiddush number three, that when someone makes Shabbos early, it's not like he's really doing a mitzvah that's therefore going to bind his wife to that minhag. And Rav Moshe goes even a step further and he says, there is a halacha that if an entire community accepts Shabbos at a particular time, that everyone is bound by that Kabbalah Shabbos, even though it's not dark out yet. So in most of in the larger Jewish communities, there are shuls that daven at all different times. Even within a shul, they'll have multiple different minyanim davening at all different times. But let's say you have like a one shul community where that one shul makes Shabbos early, every week, then nobody is allowed to make late Shabbos. Everyone is obligated, everyone is bound by that Kabbalah Shabbos of the community. Where does this happen? This most commonly happens in summer camps. There used to be a thing called summer camp where Jews used to go for the summer. So when a person goes away for the summer, so very often the camp is going to make Shabbos early because they still want to be able to plan something, Friday night activity or whatever. So they're going to make Shabbos early, and there's only one minyan that's making Shabbos early. So there are people, there are staff, spouses sometimes, who come up just for Shabbos. And if those people come up late for Shabbos, after the camp was ready Mekabel Shabbos, it's not at all pashut that they're allowed to drive into the camp. Because that community, that enclosed community of the camp, is Mekabel Shabbos early. That's binding on anyone who's going to be a member of that community. So you're not allowed to go and be Mekabel Shabbos, says Rav Moshe. But if they're just doing it for convenience, it doesn't bind you. If they're just doing it because they want to have a night activity, they're not doing it because they really care about the mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos, and they would never do it if it was December. They're just doing it because it's the summertime and it's so late, then it's fine. Then you're not at all bound by that Kabbalah Shabbos. So, wow. So chiddush number three of Rav Moshe is that even if you have a good practice that is on the books, it should be a mitzvah, it's not binding on anybody if it's done for the sake, for the purpose, with the kavana of doing it for convenience sake. So let's take apart one chiddush at a time of Rav Moshe and see how others reacted. So the greatest by far of the three chiddushim, what would you think? The greatest, I wish we could be more interactive over here, but the greatest of the three chiddushim is clearly chiddush number one. That's the greatest of the three chiddushim. That you're going to compare an Eved who has no chiyuv of Shabbos himself, but there's a pasuk in the Torah that you can't have your avadim do malacha for you. You're going to compare that to a husband-wife relationship. So that was not long in coming for poskim to reject that chiddush of Rav Moshe. The first one to reject that, I mean, I'm sure there were others, but one that I saw was Rav Shmuel Halevi Vazner. Rav Shmuel Halevi Vazner in his Tshuvas Shevet Halevi Chelek Zayin Simen Lamed Hei, he says that the person who asked Rav Vazner a question was asking that since we know where Rav Moshe writes that a woman is not allowed to do malacha for her husband once the husband's been mekabel Shabbos, what about children? Can the children do malacha for their dad after he's been mekabel Shabbos? That was the shaila. So Rav Vazner says, whoa, back up a minute. You think I'm accepting that a woman is not allowed to do malacha for her husband once the husband's been mekabel Shabbos and that's an issur d'oraisa? No way. I absolutely reject that. I don't reject you. I reject your premise. And as far as kids are concerned, I would say even children are allowed to do malacha for their father after the father's already been mekabel Shabbos and the children are not mekabel Shabbos. This is not at all similar to the situation of an Eved. And, to explain why, Rav Schechter, now I don't know if many of you have been following, but throughout this entire horrible and crazy and unprecedented tekufa that we've been going through, Rav Schechter has been writing lots of tshuvas. Not recently, not in the last few weeks, but when things were really, really rough in the tri-state area, he just dedicated himself to paskening the halachas for Klal Yisrael, and he wrote a number of tshuvas that on issues that were coming up at the time. I hope he decides to publish them in a sefer one day. I think it will be a very important work, historically an important work. It was a fascinating thing. It was one of the great zechuyos of my life to be able to sort of get a front row seat as he was doing that, to be able to participate in that process. We would bring him the shilas. He would write a tshuva by hand. Someone would go to his house, pick up the handwritten tshuva, scan it, send it to a group of talmidim, and we would type it up and then go over it. We would translate it. The translations are not his own. Those were, so if you think they're a little off, sometimes they are. We would translate it, and then we would go over the tshuva with him on the phone to make sure that every word is exactly how he wants it and that he was comfortable with the translation. Sometimes the translations were deliberately not exact translations of the Hebrew. So Rav Schechter wrote a tshuva in one of his tshuvas Corona. He wrote a tshuva about Tosefa Shabbos, and he quoted this Rav Moshe. He first quoted it from the Sefer Mesoris Moshe, not the Igros Moshe. Mesoris Moshe, Rabbi Mordechai Tendler put together, a three-volume sefer of Piskei Halacha from Rav Moshe Feinstein. So Rav Schechter first quoted from the Mesoris Moshe, but then said, and I later discovered that it's really in the Igros Moshe as well, and he quotes this this chiddush. So Rav Schechter says that this is a very, very great chiddush. He says, "Ubipshuto yesh makom lechalek b'neihem," that the simple pshat is that there is reason to distinguish between having an eved do malacha for you, which enochinami is an issur d'oraisa, and a wife doing malacha for her husband. Di yesh din ala bailim shel shvisas behemto shebehema inan abas chiyuv b'shmer shabbos v'chein b'shvisas banav hakatanim v'chein b'shvisas avadav shalom malav lo tavlu l'shem kedusha. He says, what do these things have in common? You're not allowed to have your animal do malacha for you. You're not allowed to have your children do malacha for you. And you're not allowed to have, on Shabbos itself, and you're not allowed to have your avadim who are not Jewish yet do malacha for you. What do all of those groups have in common? Your children, your behema, and your eved who's not Jewish. What they all have in common is none of them are chayiv in Shabbos. None of them have their own mitzvah of Shabbos. So the entire Isser in the Torah is don't have someone who doesn't have their own mitzvah of Shabbos do malacha for you when they're living under your jurisdiction. But someone who themselves has an actual mitzvah of Shabbos and Isurim of Shabbos and their own relationship with Shabbos, this halacha doesn't apply. This din d'oraisa of having them do malacha for you doesn't apply. Halo ishto bas chiyuva yi. Your wife is a bas chiyuva. Umuzheres yel shvisas atzma b'shabbos. She has her own responsibilities of shvisas ha-shabbos. And therefore, Rav Shechter thought that to suggest that the wife would not be allowed to do malacha for the husband after the husband has been mekabel Shabbos, he thought that that's a very, very great chiddush. And if you're going to accept Rav Moshe, you then have to contend with hadlakas neiros, because when a woman lights Shabbos candles, well, why is it that women are the ones lighting Shabbos candles? Men are also obligated in lighting Shabbos candles. So the Mishnah Berurah discusses, Shulchan Aruch himself discusses, Mishnah Berurah adds another reason, but there are reasons why specifically women have the practice of being the primary ones involved in lighting Shabbos candles. But when she lights Shabbos candles, she's doing it for the whole family. And if the woman is away for Shabbos, she's not home, then the husband has to light Shabbos candles, meaning it is a mitzvah that the husband has also. So if you're going to accept Rav Moshe, you then have to contend with, is she even allowed to light Shabbos candles? Because isn't she doing that for her husband as well? Yes, she's doing it for herself, but she's also doing it for her husband. So that's another twist in terms of the chiddush number one of Rav Moshe. Chiddush number two of Rav Moshe, I'll try to move a little more quickly now. Chiddush number two of Rav Moshe said that, well, if it's the husband's practice to start Shabbos early, then the wife is bound by that practice that the husband has to start Shabbos early. Meaning as long as it's not being done out of convenience, it's just a practice that he does all the time, then the wife is bound by that practice as well. So Rav Shechter had an issue with this one as well, but the other person that argues with Rav Moshe on this is Rav Moshe Sternbach. Rav Moshe Sternbach is the current Gaivit of the Eid HaRedis, the Abbezin of the Eid HaRedis in Yerushalayim. And Rav Moshe Sternbach, in Chela Gimel of Chuvos Van Hagos, Simon Pehei, is not convinced that Rav Moshe is correct about this one either. And he adds a little bit of a wrinkle. He says, you know what? She's not bound by his practice to be Mekabel Shabbos early, but it's entirely inappropriate to have one house where it's Shabbos for some people and not Shabbos for other people at the same time in the same house. And therefore, when the husband comes home, by the time he comes home from shul, the wife should have already lit Neros Shabbos, because Shabbos should have started in the house already. So I mentioned at the very beginning, my wife often tells me and my kids, you can come home, but not before, you know, and she'll give a time, not before 7:30. And the idea is, she knows it's not going to be Shabbos in the house before 7:30. So she either saw this tshuva of Rav Sternbach or intuited that it must be correct, that you shouldn't have people coming home into an environment that's not Shabbos when it's Shabbos for them already. But in Rav Sternbach's tshuva, it's very clear that she doesn't really have to accept Shabbos when he does, even if he has a practice to do so. Rav Shechter clarified this a little bit further. He clarified what the issue is and why it is that she doesn't have to accept Shabbos at the same time that he does when he has such a practice. Because Rav Shechter said, wait a second, is a woman really bound by every minhag that the husband has? He says, you know, the idea of why is it that a woman has to follow a man's minhagim and a husband doesn't follow a wife's minhagim? Where does that come from? What's that based on? So the assumption is that there's a sugya maseches pesachim where the Gemara talks about that if you move from one city to another and you don't plan on ever moving back, you're just going to a different city, and in that city they have certain minhagim, so you have to follow the minhagim of the city that you move to. That's the halacha. So if I move, years ago, if someone were to move from a German Jewish community to a Hungarian Jewish community, so his minhagim would change entirely. You'd have to follow a whole new set of minhagim. So the assumption is that the woman is coming into the husband's household, the husband's family, and therefore it has a din of holich lemakom shenagu, going to a place where there's such a minhag. But says Rav Moshe, says Rav Shechter rather, that only applies to communal minhagim. That doesn't apply to personal minhagim. That applies to how many hours to wait between milchiks and fleishiks, things like that. Things that are, you know, gebrachts and, all the kidneys and all of those things. Things that an entire community is responsible for. So if a community, if you're going to marry someone who's Svartic, so the Svartic community eats kidneys and you can have your fruity pebbles on Pesach, which, by the way, I mean, that's unbelievable, no? Fruity pebbles on Pesach. So that's so you can have that practice. But if it's not a communal minhag, it's a personal minhag, even though it's a minhag. It's a minhag that he does religiously, even during the winter. But it's a personal minhag. Why does she have to be bound by his personal minhagim? There's no such halacha that she's bound by his personal minhagim. Furthermore, particularly when it comes to something that's really personal, or maybe even something that's more in her jurisdiction than his. There's a fellow in my shul who's a grandson of Rav Pam, Zichrono Livracha. Rav Pam is Rav Shiva and Tarav Das, and he told me that when his father got married, when Rabbi Aaron Pam got married, he asked his grandfather, Rabbi Avram Pam, how many candles his wife should light, because his wife's minhag is to light, I forgot which way it was, I think his wife's minhag was to light two candles, his wife's minhag was to light as many candles as there are children in the house, and his family minhag, the way he always saw his mother, was to light only two candles. So Rav Pam told his son, well, you know, our family minhag is that we light as many candles as there are children in the home. And the son said, but mommy never did that. What are you talking about? She only lit two candles. He said, yeah, that was her family minhag, so that's what she did. So he said, but wait a second, but if it's our family minhag, why didn't she follow our family minhag? He said, because it's candle lighting. That's more her thing than my thing. So she should follow what she saw growing up. So it's not so crazy to suggest that how is a woman in the Kabbalah Shabbos by lighting candles? That maybe her Kabbalah Shabbos should be dependent on her minhag and not his minhag. But certainly if it's a personal minhag, you don't have to be bound by a personal minhag of somebody else. It comes out that, by the way, there's a big chumrah. I remember when one of my sisters got married. I have three sisters. So when one of them got married, she married someone from a Hasidic background. You wouldn't know it necessarily by looking at him, but you know, in terms of his practices, his minhagim, they're Hasidic minhagim. So one of his minhagim is that he doesn't eat kebraks on Pesach. So this caused some discussion in my parents' home when they came for Yantiv, and because he said, I can't eat on these plates, you know, you guys are, you know, you're eating gebraks off these plates, I can't eat off these plates. So one of the rabbanim that my father had spoken to about this said, just tell him to be matir neder and that will be the end of it. Let it be matir neder, and you won't have to keep kebraks anymore. So Rav Shechter would say, absolutely not. Hataras Nadarim doesn't work. Hataras Nadarim could work on your own minhag, on your own personal minhag. But if it's a community minhag, as long as you're part of that community, you can't just be matir neder your way out of a community. You can move out of a community. You could decide, I no longer am a chassid, and now I'm modern Orthodox, or I'm no longer modern Orthodox. Now we have a Talmud from DRS, the first year that I was teaching in DRS. We had a Talmud, a regular modern Orthodox kid from Jamaica States, who is now a Breslover chassid living in Mei Sharon. So he no longer observes modern Orthodox minhagim. And it would be weird if he did. I mean, his kids don't speak English. They've never been to any city except for, you know, Uman and Tzvat and Yerushalayim and Jamaica States, I guess. You know, it would be strange if they followed modern Orthodox minhagim. You could decide to leave the community. But so long as you're in that community, you can't just be matir neder your way out. So this is a very critical difference between different types of minhagim. Rav Moshe himself, in various tshuvas, makes that same distinction. And clearly in this tshuva, he's talking in a case where it's a community minhag, and it says only then is the wife going to be bound by the community minhag. So the truth is, Rav Moshe is not, it's not really something questionable that he wrote over here. It's just a matter of interpreting what the metzias is, what the facts on the ground are. Then we'll dedicate 2 minutes to the last one. The third chiddush that Rav Moshe said is that if they're doing it just for convenience, then it's certainly not binding on anybody. So Rav Vosner in Shevet HaLevi says, what are you talking about? It's just as much of a mitzvah, even if you're doing it just for convenience. I mean, let's say you put on tefillin because it's convenient for you that day. Let's say you eat matzah because it's convenient for you that day. You still get the mitzvah, so why does it matter that you're doing it just out of convenience? So I think there was a misunderstanding of what Rav Moshe meant over here. He did not mean to say that you don't get the mitzvah by making Shabbos early, even when you're doing it just out of convenience. Of course you get the mitzvah. What he meant is that it is not a binding minhag. It is not a community declaring that this must be Shabbos. An hour before sunset must already be declared Shabbos, and therefore everyone is bound by that. You only say that when it's a matter of principle that it must be that way. when you do it on a Shabbos that's convenient for you, great. So you're doing a mitzvah when it's convenient for you. That's wonderful that you choose to do that mitzvah. Rav Moshe would agree that it's a mitzvah, but not that it has a binding nature to it. So I think that one, that particular point of Rav Moshe, is often thought of as this great chiddush, but it's not really such a great chiddush. It's probably the simple pshat that when you're doing something out of convenience, that's no longer going to be binding on everybody else because it's really not a matter of principle. But it's still a mitzvah. Of course it's still a mitzvah. Whenever you do something good, it's a mitzvah. So once we've mentioned all three chidushim of Rav Moshe and the differences between them, let me just do a quick rundown to summarize what people actually say, right? If a husband is mekabel Shabbos, so if you know, you were spacing out the whole time, which is very easy to do on Zoom. So at least, you know, like the last couple of minutes, let's just get the basic shittos over here. Rav Moshe Shita is that the woman does not have to be mekabel Shabbos when the husband does, if he's just doing it out of convenience, but she cannot do malacha for him. She could do whatever malacha she wants, just not for him. Rav Vosner holds that she always has to follow whatever her husband does, and she has to know exactly when he's saying Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbos in Shul. And when that's happening, says Rav Vosner, that's when Shabbos starts at home. That's when she has to start Shabbos as well. Rav Sturmbach and Rav Vadi Yosef also say that a woman does not have to follow her husband's beginning of Shabbos, but by the time he gets home from shul, within the household, it has to be Shabbos at the same time. You can't have some people keeping Shabbos and others not keeping Shabbos. Rav Schechter holds that a woman is not bound by her husband's minhag at all when it comes to this, because it is a personal practice and it's a personal chumrah. And even within the house, he can keep his personal chumrahs without her keeping those same chumrahs. And therefore, just because he decided, and even if he doesn't consistently, he decided to start Shabbos early, it does not mean that she has to begin Shabbos early, and she can continue to do malacha for herself, for him, or anybody, because it is not yet Shabbos for her. So I hope that was clear. I thank you all for coming to learn with me this evening, and continue atzlach. I think it's so wonderful that so many of you are still coming out to learn. It's really, really great. Ashreichem.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Rabbi, do you have 2 minutes? There are a couple of questions in the chat.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. One question was, with all this parallel, the same at the end of Shabbos, if someone was going to keep Rabbeinu Tam.
So, certainly as far as Minhagim are concerned, that's actually a very good example. Meaning, let's say the husband has a practice to keep Rabbeinu Tam. So for many people nowadays that have that practice, it's purely a chumrah that they keep, a personal chumrah. The wife is not bound by the husband's personal chumrahs. But if he comes from a community where they always kept Rabbeinu Tam, he's a Satmar Chassid, where they, in Europe, they used to keep Rabbeinu Tam Lekula on Fridays. They would continue to do Malacha for, you know, a half hour after Shkia on Fridays. So if that's really the communal practice, so then she's moved into that community, so she should be bound by that, yeah.
Okay, another question. I'm sorry, you'll let me know when you have to run. A question about if there's a daughter or a child that's above Bar Bas Mitzvah age and both parents have accepted Shabbos at one time, are they obligated in that exact time? Especially if the father, let's say, hasn't come home yet. Kind of what would obligate, I guess, a lot of the crowd that is here right now if parents right. accept Shabbos early?
But it's not only about husband and wife, it's about children as well. Yeah, so Rav Moshe would say that the child can no longer do malacha for the parents. But I don't think they're bound by the Kabbalah Shabbos of the parents. I think Rav Schechter would say they don't have to, they're over Bar Bas Mitzvah, so they could be Mekabbalah Shabbos when they want to be Mekabbalah Shabbos. Again, provided that it's before sunset. But
okay, and one last question. I know there's a bunch of questions that are coming now. I'm sorry that we're not going to be able to answer all of them now. One last question that we'll ask is if one is doing Malacha for themselves and it may... I mean, it's not clear. Is it definitely helping the other person, or maybe making a dish that you yourself is going to eat? You're not doing it for the other person, but so if one wants to kind of accept that shita, would one be able to? Is there the gray area in between some of these?
That's probably the answer of why she's allowed to light Shabbos candles, because it's not really just for him; it's for everybody. It's for the whole house, including for her. So look, if it's a dish that only he eats, he's the only one that's not on a particular diet or something, or is on a particular diet and it's something that only he would eat, so then it would be a problem. But if it's something that everybody eats, probably not. It's probably fine.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much, Rabbi Leibowitz. I know you're running to another shir. We really, really appreciate it. And Mitzvah Hashem, we'll have many more opportunities to learn with you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Amen.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.